Welcome to the CX Goalkeeper Podcast, where we unlock the winning edge through conversations with industry experts and thought leaders. Each episode explores how transforming business through human experience creates real impact. Join us for actionable insights and fresh perspectives that inspire success. Follow, rate, and review the podcast on your favorite platform. The next episode could spark your next big idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper Podcast. Today, it's really a great opportunity because I have Greg Kihlstrom together with me. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to discuss with you. Today, we are going to discuss about the Center of Experience, a blueprint for creating the experience-led enterprise. But as usual, before we deep dive into this topic, Greg, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I come from really a marketing background, and I started way back when as a designer, but I quickly moved into marketing and marketing technology. I started, ran, and sold a digital experience agency, sold it about 7 years ago now. And since then, I work as an independent consultant for enterprise companies on everything from process change in the CX and marketing space, as well as, you know, platform selection and some other things related to customer data and all that. In addition to doing consulting and advisory work, I have a podcast of my own called The Agile Brand. And then I've written a few books as well. So one of them you mentioned, Center of Experience, I've written a few others on related topics to, you know, CX, marketing, and really just how do we reach customers in an omnichannel world.
Thank you very much. And you mentioned only a few things that you did, because if people are doing some research about you, you did a lot of things and great job. And you helped also a lot of people growing in their careers. And perhaps also linked to that, which values drive your professional life?
What was that?
Which values drive your professional life?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think my podcast is called The Agile Brand. I think, you know, the idea of being not only, to me, Agile isn't just about, you know, there's a project management, you know, kind of Scrum methodology and all those kinds of things tied up with that word. But to me, it's more a matter of being not only nimble and always kind of seeking and learning, but also willing to revisit and admit when something either was wrong and or that something needs to be revisited and maybe revived. Maybe it was good at one point, but it doesn't work anymore. And so I always I approach things in that way of like, I'm constantly learning. I write a lot. So I've kind of forced myself to do research and learn. I read a lot. I do a lot of things just to kind of force that kind of continuous learning. Cause to me, that's what life is really about.
Thank you. And today we want also to learn from you. Therefore, we know today's top player, Greg Kihlstrom. And now let's start the game. Let's kick off the game. The Center of Experience, a blueprint for creating the experience-led enterprise. And let's start discussing about your latest book, but also about your experience that you had in the last years. We all know every company, every enterprise is discussing about digital transformation. I'm not speaking about one small project, but really this big digital transformation. But for them, it's extremely difficult to make the case to understand how to drive that, how to bring that forward, not only on the short term, but also on the long term. Could you please explain a bit about that and share your experiences?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few misconceptions about it as well. But I mean, I think, you know, most companies have the best of intentions of, you know, they want to transform their business for a number of reasons. I mean, the being more customer centric is a common reason for that. And certainly there's a lot of statistics that show that, you know, being more customer focused drives revenue, it drives stock prices, you know, depending on the stats that you look at. But there's other reasons too. I mean, just inefficiencies that currently exist, and just overall this need for businesses to become more digitally focused. I mean, we've seen, you know, how many companies have we seen over the last several years that they turned us they turned a traditional business model into a subscription model when, you know, 10 years ago, you would have never guessed that some of these kinds of businesses would approach that. But, you know, it starts making sense in most, maybe not all, but like in most of these cases, it actually makes a lot of sense and it fits with a consumer need. And so knowing that that's the goal is one thing, but to your point, you know, getting there gets complicated because a lot of times we're talking about, you know, we're not talking about startups. Startups have an easy time of this. When we're talking about established businesses, there's a lot of things that have to change and move and adjust.
That's really the main thing. And I think these big companies with also a legacy system and so on have even more difficulties to drive this transformation. And you are speaking, or you shared one topic that I think it's really relevant: return on experience. It means we know we are in this experience economy. Also, the subscription model that you are sharing is really to make things more convenient for customer, for end user, and to get what they want at the point in time that they want. How is it possible to measure this return on experience on the customer side and then the employee side?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there's a few different ways. I mean, the big picture, I think, is customer lifetime value and increasing that value over time. That goes a long way, but I don't think there's a lot of CFOs and a lot of CEOs that don't want to wait for the lifetime value to kind of pan out. And I don't blame them. You know, we're not going to get away from, you know, publicly traded, you know, shareholders and stockholders and things like that. So we need some short-term gains as well. But I think the numbers bear that out also. You know, we've seen, you know, I was at the Forrester CX conference earlier this year in Nashville, and, you know, they shared some disappointing news that overall CX statistics, you know, satisfaction has gone down. But the good news is that those that were in their top tier, their revenue went up, their profitability went up. You know, like it's shocking how few companies really subscribe. Everybody talks about it, or most companies talk about it, but it's shocking how few actually subscribe to it. But those that do, they are seeing that return. And, you know, so I just use kind of the shorthand of return on experience, because investing in that, whether it's always customer experience, but there's also an employee experience component to it as well. And I think when both of those are really factored in, you're seeing efficiency gains. You're also seeing customers buying more and more often and referring others as well.
Yes, I think that makes sense. And really linking what we are doing on this experience field together with financial result. Is there perhaps an example that you can share, that a company that you helped or company that you worked with as a customer, that you were able to support them in changing that and then transforming?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to mention, you know, specific names, but I mean, you know, just as an example, you know, I do think this idea of customer lifetime value is getting, in my work, it's getting a lot easier to kind of sell into the C-suite and you know, the SVPs and all that as a KPI. I think 10 years ago, it would have been a lot harder to get people to pay attention to this, because I think we're in an evolution. And, you know, I mean, I know you work in the CX space. It's like, it's been an evolution of even kind of legitimizing some of these practices within the enterprise. And so, you know, I think now the idea of customer experience is, I would say, it's almost a given in most organizations, but still there are some that are not quite sold on this idea that it's going to generate into, you know, short-term profits and revenue and things like that. But it's getting a lot easier to have those conversations. So I think, you know, there's a curve. We're on the curve. We're not there. You know, we're not at the apex yet necessarily, but I think it's getting a lot easier. And I think, you know, when we saw, I think the pandemic brought to light you know, anyone that's ever done sales knows that it's a lot easier to keep, you know, an existing customer than it is to win a new one, right? I think things like the disruption from the pandemic and other things like that just taught a lot of organizations just the value of, let's hold on to what we have and let's keep those customers really happy. And maybe new customer acquisition in that case took a back seat. It doesn't need to take a back seat anymore, but I think they need to be equal partners.
Yes, and I think this makes totally sense. Now, thinking back on about what we discussed about companies need to transform, need to change. Let's say there is a strategy available, and now we know how to measure this transformation on the other side, on the profit side, financial side, but also on the customer experience side. But the biggest or the most difficult thing, it's really to change, to transform. How is it possible to help support companies, enterprises to implement and leverage agile methodologies within the organization to increase the impact and success of what they are doing?
Yeah, I mean, so I've worked in a number of different ways, and certainly, you know, I talk with a lot of people about agile and other related, you know, ideas and approaches. And, you know, I think the first thing that I would say is agile can look differently in different organizations. There's some purists out there that are like, there's one way and you got to do it that way. And I respect that perspective, but I've talked with many others that have worked in very large organizations successfully, and they will tell you it looks a little bit differently depending on where you go. The principles, I think, apply of, you know, there, you know, 12 principles and all that stuff, you know, collaboration and focus on business value and all of those principles, I think they've stood the test of time since 2001. You know, you can apply them to different, you can apply them to marketing or CX or technology or whatever, but like, I think they really have stood the test of time. But the mechanics of, you know, do we do a 2-week sprint or a 4-week sprint? Like those details, to be honest, they matter to the teams working on it, but they don't matter in the context of one business to another. And I think that's step one, is just realizing that, you know, it can look how it needs to look in the organization. So in other words, don't get hung up on dogma or whatever you want to call it. Like, don't get hung up on that. Do something that's going to work, because the people working on it, they're going to be stuck with this way of working for a long time, hopefully, right?
Yes, and what you're saying makes totally sense, because you said at the beginning, being nimble or adapt to this, yeah, to this transformation makes totally sense. I am working, I'm supporting now an hospital, and if I would think of creating sprints of 2 weeks, then in some sprints I don't get any physicians and any nurses, because perhaps it's a flu wave or it's something happening in the hospital, they need to focus on the patient, and then it's not working. And therefore, we decided to increase the time of the sprints so that we always have enough time to discuss and challenge also ourselves together with the physicians. And therefore, it makes totally sense. In the digital transformation, there are areas that we should focus to. I know that you are also stating them in your book, and why also customer centricity lies at the heart of all of them. Could you please elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a number of different ways to kind of slice that. I've used a few over the years, to be honest, a few different ways of looking at all of this. One construct that I think is really helpful is, so the traditional, they call it the three-legged stool. It's, you know, people, process, and platform. I've added another leg onto that stool of data. So, you know, I try to look at things of like people, process, data, and platforms. And what I always say, you know, people go into a digital transformation thinking that the platforms and the technical part is going to be the hard part. And nothing's easy. And I'm not diminishing that, where it's, you know, it's very complex. It takes really smart people to do it. But the most complex and the most challenging part is getting people to change. And you know, in the book, I go through and draw the parallel of, you know, the change curve is very similar to the process of grieving. So, you know, you go through this like denial, acceptance kind of, you know, stages of change to your job. And, you know, I think it's true. You know, people get stuck in their ways. They're proud of their work in many cases, or, you know, they're used to a certain way of working and have just been so efficient. And then all of a sudden you're asking them to change, and that everything that they were doing yesterday is wrong, and now it's got to be different. And so there's going to be natural hesitancy to do that. But So there's that component. The other reason I think it's good to break these things into pieces is because if you try to focus on it all as just one thing, it's really, really hard. And even breaking it into four parts, it's still big. But at the very least, you can get people focused on different goals and different timeframes and initiatives and things like that by breaking it down into pieces.
It totally makes sense. And four legs are more stable than three legs. Right. So
right.
It also makes sense. Perhaps do you have some tips, some suggestions that you can share with the audience, practical suggestions, how to leverage everything what you are now explaining to us?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it starts with finding some ways to get quick wins on, you know, so much of the failure of digital transformations, because the numbers are out there, you know, it's something anywhere from 3/4 to, you know, somewhere around there of these fail to meet their objective. They don't fail completely, but they fail to meet their, you know, their objectives. And so, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that are struggling, and a lot of people at those companies that are struggling to do their best to help these things succeed. So, you know, I think finding ways to get quick wins from a morale perspective, but also from a visibility perspective, as well as, you know, we try our best to plan and pretend that we know what's going to happen in 3 years or however long these things take. But again, somebody planning a 5-year transformation at the beginning of 2020 would have been in for a, you know, pretty big surprise and need to pivot. And so, you know, we've learned very recently enough that we need to build in adaptability to any plan. And so focus on quick wins. Don't lose sight of that end goal, but whatever those goals are, but, you know, find ways to get there incrementally and learn and teach learning. And I think, you know, the last thing I would say there would be, leaders need to really embrace this idea that experimentation is so key to this, but good experimentation means people are going to fail. If every experiment was successful, it wouldn't actually be an experiment. If we knew it was going to happen every time. So like, I think leaders need to be okay with that and teach that it's okay to fail as long as you learn, and that failure isn't really a thing as long as you do learn, I guess.
Yes, and this is said from somebody living in the USA. Think about me, that I'm in Europe. Failure, it's really, really difficult to accept and to go through. You mentioned something really interesting. 75% of the projects are struggling to get the result. And a few days ago, statistics were shared also about AI-related projects, in particular about generative AI. There the number is even higher. They are saying 80% of this generative AI-based projects are failing, not because of the technology, but because they are not achieving the results that they expected. First of all, what's your opinion, but also what's your guidance? How could we avoid doing projects that are not bringing the results that we are expecting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, AI certainly, I mean, I think it comes up in every conversation these days. And, you know, there's good reason. I mean, there's a lot of hype and I won't, you know, I won't discount the hype part of it, but there's also a lot of reality and a lot of things that, you know, a lot of promise. I would chalk a lot of the failure to meet objectives and all that on, you know, a mixture of being uninformed about the potential. And, you know, I think there's some other stats out there of, you know, leaders claiming they know what generative AI is and yet not being able to actually explain what it is. And so this is the classic like hype kind of thing of a leader. Here's some, you know, they read McKinsey or Harvard Business Review, whatever. It's like all the rage. And then let's go do AI, you know? And so I write a newsletter on LinkedIn called AI Isn't a Goal or a Strategy, for the very reason of I attended a meeting with a potential consulting client and their goal was AI. And I don't even know what that means. You know, it's like your goal should be like selling more widgets or increase customer satisfaction, whatever. But like their goal was AI. So like, given that, I don't think that was the only company that ever did something like that. you're going to fail to meet your goals if you don't have really strong goals. And if your goal is simply adoption of a novel technology. And so I'm not going to say that's all of the cases there, but I do think just this mismatch of, you know, leaders expecting something that they are not really 100% clear on what it is, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
Totally makes sense. And I think the interesting thing is everybody faced this issue that the bosses are coming and say, let's do a generative AI project because it's cool. And then I can share that with my friends and within the company that we are doing that. And then we calculate the business case afterwards. And that's not the right way to go. We know that. And I think this is our duty also to share that and to discuss with them. But we know that with this solution, we can also achieve great results. And basically, when these solutions are live, it's important to find ways to operationalize this digital transformation in a way that it's adaptive, but also repeatable. Because after implementing, that's perhaps for you and for me, sorry if I compare us, I'm saying it's cool because it's change, we transform, we are doing transformation and we really like it. But there are other people that they need to live then with these new solutions. What's the main point there from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of a, there's two sides to this in that I think there needs to be experimentation on some of these tools and everything. So it's, I think there needs to be both at the same time. So in other words, I think the, you know, playing around with Gen AI tools, I think that's actually a good thing as long as that's not the strategy, you know, in other words, encouraging teams to like play with stuff, like do stuff, see what works, see what doesn't, bring some ideas to the table, and then let's figure out like what are our actual strategic needs for the organization and is there a fit for some type of AI? And I also think that I'm most excited about, I mean, generative AI has a lot of promise. I'm most excited about tying different types of AI together to do new and you know, potentially novel, at least nascent things. So like using predictive analytics to calculate propensity and then generating personalized content based on those behaviors. So that's two different kinds of AI working together for the benefit of the customer. And you know what, if we get someone that's likely to buy quicker, the business wins as well. And I think starting to think like everybody's got to start somewhere. So the teams have to start learning and understanding this stuff and wrapping their heads around it, or else they're not going to be able to bring good ideas to the table. But I think leaders need to think through that parallel path of like, we got to stay strategic, but let's have some like playtime with the toys as well. And then, you know, as long as there's a process in place to feed those things, then I think we can learn. And the other thing that I would just say is like with these digital transformations in progress, it's not too late to think about how AI could be mapped onto an existing transformation. Like you don't have to throw it out, but you don't have to just tack it on either. You know, I think just tacking on AI is where some of the things you were mentioning is like they're failing to meet objectives, but maybe there's some strategic ways to incorporate something that's in progress as well.
It totally makes sense also rethinking what we are doing and improving that. We are coming to an end of this game. In the extra time, I have still few questions for you. But before we go into the extra time, also to the audience, please post this podcast. Go to Greg's podcast, The Agile Brand, subscribe it, share a review. I think he's really sharing outstanding insights, great guest, and therefore please take the time to follow Greg's podcast and have a look at all his books on Amazon. I think it's really relevant. Now, let's go in the last 3-4 minutes of this game, the extra time. Fast forward, in 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What we are discussing about?
Yeah, I mean, that's that far out gets tough. But, you know, I do think some of the things that we're starting to see now are, you know, lots of talk about AI and Gen AI and all those things. You know, we're dealing with things like AI agents, so like Copilot and, you know, and some of those things. I think the step beyond that is AI agents working with AI agents. And so, you know, this concept of like someone like myself, for instance, I have a team of AIs that help me. You know, some it could be in my personal life as well, but I wish that I had an AI agent to do my dry cleaning or whatever, but like maybe that'll happen at some point. But in work, you know, this idea that, you know, we have teams of intelligent or semi-intelligent things that are helping us do tasks. And I think some of what we're going to be talking about is, you know, I think doing that is not going to get rid of the human in the equation, but it is going to elevate the work that we do. And I also think it's going to allow us to personalize across many more channels and ways of thinking. So I think we're going to be talking a lot more about, you know, whether it's AR, VR, you know, all those kinds of things and personalization in the real world and what that looks like in the customer experience. I think we're just touching on that right now. And to me, that's pretty exciting to be able to just kind of outsource some of that stuff that needs to get done to a team. And, you know, and I think customers will win. There's going to be some, just like now, there's going to be some rocky starts or whatever, but I think customers will eventually win. And I think businesses will be able to really utilize their human assets strategically and doing the creatively, like doing the stuff that we're really good at.
And for the cleaning that you mentioned at the beginning, there will be robots, physical robots doing that for you. Also, you will gain some time for other stuff. Yeah. What's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, so I'm really active on LinkedIn. I encourage anybody, you know, feel free to reach out to me there, or you can find my podcast. It's available, you know, Spotify, Apple, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Would love to have you follow and listen.
Thank you. And now we are coming to the last question. It's Greg Golden Nugget. It's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience with.
Yeah, I think to kind of go back to the very first point, I think to me, the thing that's always been helpful is to just stay hungry for learning and knowledge. And, you know, so find that thing. Like I've got my own ways of doing that. Like I mentioned, I write and I do things like that, but it doesn't have to look the same for every person, but, you know, find a way to stay hungry and stay interested and keep learning, because I think that's the best way. You know, if you're worried about things like AI and all these kinds of things, the best way to stay ahead of any of this and stay ahead in your career is just to keep learning and figuring out ways to apply that knowledge.
Greg, thank you very much for your time. I think this is also the why of this podcast. We all want to learn. We want to learn from the best. And therefore, Greg, thank you very much for joining this podcast. Stay with me, to the audience. For today, it's everything. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion. Please follow Greg's work. It's really worth it. Thank you very much and bye-bye.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.